yo! It's your boy Opti. We're back for another TTO. I'm super excited for this one. Before I even scheduled Mark, I knew I wanted to have this conversation. If you don't know who Mark Goodwin is, he is one of the editors for the physical Bitcoin mag. I have a few of them here. He makes these, guys. He's the one making these physical zines with my other friend Joe. And he continuously has been talking about CBDC, stablecoin, synthetic dollars, and fiat, or, you know, fiat on the Lightning Bitcoin rails. And this is why I wanted to bring him on. I feel like this is a good conversation we haven't had on Simply Bitcoin. And I honestly haven't heard this conversation anywhere else much either. I've seen it on Twitter. So I was like, you know what? I want to bring you on and let's talk about this, Mark. And then it turns out that over the weekend for the past week or so, Mark is basically, ground zero for a lot of controversy over on Bitcoin Twitter. So I am pretty sure by the end of today's episode, we'll kind of jump in on that as well. But before I go too far, let me bring in our guest. Mark, how you doing, bro? We were talking about this behind the scenes. But I met Mark officially at Bitcoin 2022 Beefsteak, and I saw him on Twitter for a while. He was just playing music, playing guitar, and I just saw him, and I went up to him like, yo, what's up, bro? I love what you're doing. And then we just started broing out on one of my favorite singer-songwriters, Harry Nilsson. And ever since then, Mark's just been on the map with me, and I'm just like, all right, like, this guy's cool. If you know who Harry Nilsson is, then this guy is cool. So just like, you know, in my opinion, I love what you're doing. First and foremost, you guys are killing it over here on these freaking absolutely beautiful magazines.
Thank you, bro.
Of course, your co-worker or a partner over there with Joe Rogers. And Joe Rogers is like family to me. So totally. I absolutely love what you're doing, bro. And again, I don't know how new you are to Bitcoin, but like, you came in hot this last couple of months, and you have a lot of spicy takes. And so I'm sure it might get contentious here in a little bit. But anyway, say what's up to the crowd, Mark. How you doing, bro?
Yo, Opti, thanks so much for having me, brother. Yeah, I mean, as you just said, man, like, day one, you know, we ran into each other at Away Slice's little gathering of the crazies, and just immediately, you know, you were just so supportive and kind, and you were like, you were giving me good advice. You were like, no, you know, man, I love your stuff. Here, you know, practice to a metronome. You know, you were giving me real tangible, you know, compliment sandwich shit. And it's just, I love that about Bitcoin, man. Like, you know, Bitcoin's a means to an end. You know, it's just money. And, you know, when you can get people together on like a much deeper level, I felt at home right away. And, you're the homie. And, Simply Bitcoin's the shit. And, I'm super excited to be here. You guys do amazing stuff. And, we'll definitely get into the controversy shit for sure. I'm not trying to come in hot, you know, I'm always trying to come in as a good faith engager, try to do the logical thing. But of course, you know, I have a strong moral floor, and what I believe in, I believe in. And I'm not going to let the commons, push me away from what I believe is right. So lots of shit to talk about for sure. But yeah, I mean, let's get into some of this.
Love it. Okay.
Dollar Bitcoin shit.
All right, bro. Sure. So I do have some tweets up here. I'm going to pull them up just so we have, you know, a jumping off point, and then you can take them wherever you want. Again, I kind of want to just pick your brain, and then we'll kind of talk this out. And then, of course, I think I have some tweets leading into the controversies and everything. So this first one for the audio listeners, this is a tweet. This is literally the tweet that I saw. It's not the first tweet that I've seen from you, Mark, talking about this stuff, but this is a tweet that I sent you, and I'm like, yo, bro, like, let's talk about this on Simply. So we'll start with this tweet, and we'll move into the other ones as well. I do have some tweets from our boy Joe. So hey, Joe, if you're out there, dude, and you want a link to jump on real quick, it's a live invite. We're doing it live. Okay. Anyways, we got this tweet by Mark. You go, FedNow being an interbanking transfer network and not a retail CBDC token only seems like a victory for plebs if you think the USD is the reserve asset and not US treasuries. It's actually way worse. And you got like the 1984 meme here for the audio listeners. And you go, don't worry, you will get your retail CBDC from Fed chosen banks backed by the synthetic UST payment rail, which will allow far more consumer restriction rights due to being issued by the private sector and not directly by the government. Same playbook as Palantir or Meta. Interbank rates and rails are far more important than M1 balances. And you got a Magoo tweet here. I see you and Magoo go back and forth all day. FedNow is worse than a CBDC CDC. And I think on that same note, this was yesterday. You did broke. Government issued CBDC, woke. Retail stable coins are actually the CBDC, bespoke. Here comes Apple Pay plus FedNow. So, and we even got Chris, our boy Chris down here, goes, spoke Apple Pay plus FedNow on Lightning. And you go, you mean UMU. Oof. All right, bro. So I do have more stuff here, other tweets here, but let's just start with the basics. What are you trying to get at here? And what is the idea? Start with that. And then I'll add another question.
Yeah, totally. Well, I think that there's a lot of sort of like red herrings or like MacGuffins, whatever kind of phrase you want to use when people talk about central bank digital currencies. And the main thing that people sort of seem to talk about is that central bank digital currencies are going to be this like, panopticon sort of like just all seeing eye of, you know, surveilling all payment rails and all payments by, you know, citizens of the government that issues the CBDC. And that's really been the like the narrative that's been pushed, is that it's this total like 1984 shit. And unfortunately, I mean, I think we have to look at the system we're in now and realize that we're already there. And yes, there's cash and there are a couple ways to do, you know, some things. But for the most part, we're completely surveilled in every way. Snowden leaks revealed that. We know what the NSA is capable of. And then, of course, we know, you know, what. Rights have been restricted in the banking sector and in payment rail sectors, you know, via like, you know, free speech protests and stuff. We saw that in Canada, with the trucker movement, right? So we're already kind of there. And so this big fear of, oh, the government's going to directly issue a CBDC and they're going to have control and blacklisting and they can seize your funds and track everything. And I think the actual playbook that we've seen the U.S. government run when they've built these sort of surveillance programs, I mentioned Palantir and Meta, they and even Twitter up until, you know, recently, depending on how you feel about Elon, heavily influenced by government contracts and by government agents themselves. And so the playbook is sort of, let's keep these public squares, or what should be public squares, whether it's communication networks, social media, or, you know, eventually, you know, the banking sector. Let's take these public squares, and rather than have to take on the sort of government responsibility of giving kind of free access, you know, to citizens and have a lot less restrictions being in the public sector, instead, we keep it in the private sector. Meta is a humongous surveillance network. I mean, it collects so much data and it sells all of your data. But being it a private company, I mean, they're able to take your data that you sign off for and agree to and sell it to, private companies that are often contracted by the government as well. And so this data is everywhere. I mean, you say something near an iPhone and it's recorded. There's an absolute potential case for that. You know, you email something in Gmail, so we're kind of already in this surveillance state, and this fear of the government taking over money in the very, you know, specific government issued way, to me is, it's sort of like, I look at it as almost like, there's going to be this push, these actors basically coming up and being like, we need to push back against a directly government issued CBDC. We need to give this right to the private sector. And people get excited about that and think that this is like a win for the people. And it's really not. The private sector is one of the biggest problems. Certainly the government induced or endorsed private sector is one of the biggest problems that Americans and really, frankly, the world has to deal with. And I also think it gets to sort of the mechanisms of how the banking system works. And that was that comment on US dollars versus US treasuries. And the asset that the Fed is selling, that people need to be able to, that they need to be able to sell and package up their debt, they're these treasuries. And they're not US dollars. And they sell treasuries to private banks in the private sector, who then take those treasuries and then create M1 and create credit out of buying these treasuries and create dollars in your bank account. And that idea of a win that, oh, it's not a directly issued thing. Well, where does that leave this power vacuum? And it leaves it for the private sector to come in and release basically retail CBDCs that are backed by U.S. Treasuries. The U.S. government is completely inundated with debt, and they need to service that debt. And the way that they do it is by selling treasuries. So who is kind of left to be able to actually, purchase treasuries en masse in a way to keep this kind of economic hegemon going? And it's private banks looking to create, M1, basically, and then stablecoin issuers who are also looking to create M1 in the form of like stablecoins. But they're the biggest buyers, or one of the biggest buyers of U.S. treasuries en masse. And we've seen, huge inflows into stablecoins. And a lot of fuckery in the stablecoin world since 2020, and since a lot of this kind of new economic policy, we've dealt with the whiplash of cutting rates and now jacking them up faster than ever. So rolling that all back, the Fed now being this basically a interbank payment network, that's a 365, 24/7, instantaneous interbank network, is actually a lot worse in that it centralizes so much of the way that the banking system is set up, and really nationalizes the Fed even more, and makes the ability to set basically these interbank overnight rates, where they exchange treasuries for cash if there's an imbalance one way or the other. And these interbank rates are set by the Fed. You've probably heard the reverse repo rate. So a repo rate is just a repurchase agreement. And all that means is that you're offering to, if you have a lot of cash, you're offering to give cash. If you want treasuries, you're offering to give cash to buy some treasuries just to hold for overnight. And you're agreeing to repurchase it in the morning, and you pay a fee because, you need these treasuries. A reverse repo obviously is the opposite of that. So it's when you have treasuries and you need cash because depositors are trying to get out of your bank, and you know, we're all fractional reserved anyway, so no one has the deposits, but you need to go, hey, I need to, I need to sell these treasuries just for a night to make sure that in the morning we don't go bankrupt. So we saw this reverse repo market come out of really nowhere. There was a repo crisis in September 2019, and then in 2020 and 2021, we saw the reverse repo market, which used to be like, billions, like not that much, go up to, settling $2 trillion a day. And we've been in that world now for like 2 years. And that interbank overnight rate is now, about 5%. It's really high. So that yield is really, really high. And what FedNow basically does is it gives it like instant ability to make whole any bank, and then set the rate to whatever it wants of any of these interbank transfers, which, because every bank is fractionally reserved, it just gives more and more and more power to the Federal Reserve banking system. And it's going to most likely continue to obviously onshore the dollar and take power away from these offshore dollar markets like the euro market. This is a pretty much a direct attack on the LIBOR, which is the rate, the overnight rate in London, that's set by a bunch of European banks. And this reverse repo yield going up is basically, hey, you can make a lot more money by coming to the US and storing your capital in the US, which is the reason why you raise interest rates. You want to get rid of these inflationary effects from printing all this money. We want to crush demand. Give us your dollars and we'll give you 5%. Everyone is starting to pour into the U.S. banking system and buying treasuries to get these crazy yields. So we're seeing like a nationalization, a centralization. We're seeing regional banks fail. We're seeing deposits going into the big American four banks. And then we're seeing this new thing coming out in July, which is going to make that ever more efficient and give ever more power to, whoever is sitting at the computer that wants to, put another digit in and change, the overnight rate. So to me, I think FedNow is actually a lot more dangerous than just a government issued. I mean, I don't think a government issued direct CBDC would be worse than, sort of the surveillance and right to blacklist and the trusted third partiness of our banking system or already stablecoin providers as is. It really wouldn't be that much worse. Whereas this centralization and nationalization of the United States banking system towards the Federal Reserve is a lot more perverse.
Absolutely love it. I hope everyone was following along because I'm like, you're hitting me with stuff. I'm like, yeah, this sounds right to me. But I mean, if we've learned anything in the recent, you know, in the recent future, in the recent news, is that the private sector is an extension of government institutions. Like,
yeah.
it's not like a conspiracy theory anymore. Like, this is factual. This is how things work in the modern world. And as you're saying, and I've had this conversation with not only you and Joe, but a couple other friends. Like, it's very obvious that money is already digital and we are already surveilled. Like, we are basically already in a CBDC system. It's just not as obvious. And of course, you know, this is one of the beautiful aspects of Bitcoin that we love so much. It's a system completely out of anyone's control, but it's absolutely amazing the mental gymnastics that people have to go through to not endorse Bitcoin, to literally solve whatever problems that they think they're trying to solve. And you're just like, guys, like, Bitcoin fixes this. Like, Bitcoin is my stable coin. Like, what are you guys talking about? Like, why are you guys overcomplicating all this stuff? But absolutely love it. Okay, let's get into this one of these other tweets, because I do kind of want to keep this around an hour, and it seems like we could probably do this for like 2 hours. So, all right.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably 4 or 5.
Yeah, buddy, exactly. Yeah. All right. So you gave them the basics, and I think we're going to tie this in with some tweets that Joe's been saying. And I'm sure you and Joe have this conversation every single day. So I can only imagine.
Twice a day.
Yeah. So I can only imagine that you know exactly what Joe's saying here. So again, for the audio listeners, we got some tweets by Joe Rogers. He goes, CBDCs are coming whether you like it or not. In the US, they'll be cloaked to stable coins. They'll be more blatant in other jurisdictions. Spooks will try to convince you that these synthetic dollars should ride on Bitcoin rails and you should support this. Reject their frame. And one more, stable coins and CBDCs are just dollars. People who support these technologies are regarded and or evil. Okay, so that's Joe Rogers. But anyways, Mark,
yes,
are you privy to these conversations? What is Joe saying in these very eloquent tweets here?
Yeah, I mean, Joe definitely has a way with words. He's straight to the point and savage, and I love him for it. I mean, there's a lot to talk about there. I would say one of the main things that we do talk about a lot is this idea of stable coins being this like freedom technology, and how stable coins are banking the unbanked, and they're giving, you know, people in hyperinflating countries, you know, access to the dollar, and how it's this like, you know, loving act basically to, you know, sell, you know, the global South stable coins, right? I mean, it's this big thing. It's virtue signaled a lot. It's talked about a lot. And I would say that like there is some truth to it in a sense where if you really are in one of these places like in Argentina or Venezuela or whatever, where you're seeing huge bouts of inflation, like true inflation. Like there's a protecting your purchasing power using the dollar. I totally understand that. But like, what is the dollar? Like, what is the dollar system? And the dollar system is a very perverse, empirical, militarist, like industrial complex petrodollar derivative. It's not a great thing. I mean, the US government is you know, one of the biggest terrorist organizations in the world, frankly, if you look at you know, the numbers, you know, since we basically started this war on terror, like post 9/11, it's like who's killed more Americans than anyone? It's the US government. And the way they finance this imperialism and this, you know, colonialism, depending on where it is, some of it colonialism literally for, you know, oil with the mechanics of the petrodollar. You know, this, you know, we're basically financing the US government to continue on their bullshit by supporting and building out rails to sell petrodollars. And this idea that we're unbanking or we're banking the unbanked, it's like, well, no, you're charging them money to use your bank account, you know? I mean, stablecoins are not like a trustless thing. They're a completely, you know, trusted third party, and they have counterparty risk. And, you know, that's something that, you know, I think was obvious before, but clearly we should have learned with Signature and Silvergate and some of these connections. And then obviously, of course, some of the more clever attempts like with Luna or whatever, these algorithmic attempts, you know, that, but definitely more so the direct issuance from stablecoin providers like USDC or Tether that, or BUSD that are getting exposure to US treasuries, in order to get that yield and then issuing stablecoins on top of it. So like, what are you really supporting when you're building stablecoin rails? You're selling petrodollar derivatives. Like, don't fool yourself. Like, that's what it is. And why do Bitcoiners want to do that? Like, why would Bitcoiners want to put petrodollar derivatives into the base layer, and then transact with stablecoins on Lightning? I think that that's very like counter to a lot of the sort of, I hate to say mission, because I don't think anyone should imbue the mission of what Bitcoin is, but you know, the potential of what Bitcoin could be is really like defanging this, honestly, frankly, this terrible thing in the US dollar system. And to me, it just seems very confused and maybe a slightly naive at what the actual mechanisms that are being created. It's like creating a rail to be able to dollarize the world even faster than it already is. I don't really want to participate in that. Like I don't respect the state. I don't respect the Federal Reserve. I think that the way that they've manipulated interest rates and you know, the support and the bailing out of the private sector after 2008 that left millions of people without homes, and no one went to jail for it. And you know, the political divide of like every, you know, Fed chair since Volcker in the late 70s through Powell has been nominated by one party and renominated by the other, every single one except Yellen. And that stuff is just like there's this a big purple party and imperialistic terrorist organization that operates by selling US dollar debt. And I don't want to build out those tools. I don't want to help those people. I think those people deserve the worst. And Bitcoin has a chance to really replace the reserve asset of US treasuries in the global economy in a way that the dollar really hasn't been challenged before. I think to build out rails that support the dollar system when we have an alternative here to bring the dollar onto Bitcoin just seems like one of the most sacrilegious things you could do. But you know, Bitcoin is a public square and people are going to shove shit in the witness and build tools that they want. And I understand why people realize and think that by doing this, you know, number will go up. Sailor at Pack Bitcoin talked a lot about this. Like, this is a multi-trillion dollar industry to put stable coins on Lightning because Lightning is a more superior, efficient, you know, payment protocol. And so why wouldn't we want dollars on there? You know, we can sling dollars around, you know, trustlessly and instantaneously. It's like, well, can you sling dollars trustlessly? No, you can't. It's impossible. There's no such thing as a stable coin. There's trusted third parties and there's petrodollar derivatives. And while I think the greed in me and the number go up in me understands that probably we would probably monetize quicker in US dollar denominations anyway, by bringing in this system and introducing it to the main layer. But I would rather us go slow. I mean, I would rather hyper Bitcoinization take longer, and we do it safer and do it right than try to rush into anything crazy and perhaps save the dollar system in the long term by connecting it with this demand inelastic, commodity that is Bitcoin. And that's what I wrote this book about. The Bitcoin dollar is about so much of the stuff we've talked about. But the basic thesis is like the US government is going to do whatever the hell it can to keep the dollar alive. We've learned that over and over again, whether it was seizing gold in 33, whether it was the Nixon shock in 71, whether it was the petrodollar set, you know, mechanisms in Saudi Arabia in the 80s and 90s, post 70s. The US dollar system is going to do whatever it needs to survive as a net purchasing economy and not really care too much about the individual dollar price. And Bitcoin is kind of this perfect energy commodity that can kind of replace the petro in the petrodollar And we can kind of connect Bitcoin to the dollar in this sort of monopoly of the ins and outs of the Bitcoin system, which is exactly how the petrodollar was designed. And I think we should reject a lot of that stuff as much as we can as Bitcoiners, knowing and understanding full well that you know, the U.S. dollar system is a net negative for the world. It was a tool that served its place, and now we have a better one, and we should move on.
Love it. Could you explain? You definitely touched on it, but more obviously, what do you guys mean, you and Joe? Because I think you guys are the only ones that I've heard say this: the synthetic petrodollar system.
Yeah. I mean, again, it gets back to that. You know, so you know, the dollar is digitized already. So I think when we say synthetic petrodollar system, it means you're taking, you know, well, we'll look at the petrodollar really quick. So we cut off the tie from gold. You want to tie your fiat currency to some sort of energy commodity, because it means that the fiat currency is pegged to something that's hard to produce. So gold was a fantastic technological tool, or a financial tool, for a long time, because, you know, it was hard to get out of the ground. And there was an extraction rate, you know, sub a couple percent, that you could, even with modern, you know, gold mining, that you could actually, you know, increase the supply of gold. It's like a 2% a year kind of thing. And that does a nice thing, where it makes the fiat money hard to just create out of willy nilly. So you want your fiat tied to energy. It makes a lot of sense. So gold had some issues with the way that the U.S. dollar system wanted to grow and expand, because of its extraction rate out of the ground was like below the inflation rate of, you know, what the dollars that we were printing. You know, basically the world economy called our bluff. Charles de Gaulle came, brought all his ships, and grabbed all the gold that France had given in the Bretton Woods system, and you know, brought it back to France. And there was a collapse in the London gold pool, and, you know, all of these things happened. And then, you know, Nixon, you know, severed the gold window. But so we were kind of just free floating there for a while. And you know, smartly, even though I think it's incredibly unethical and disgusting, they saw that, you know, oil was sort of the new energy commodity that was necessary for all of these countries that were industrializing. So the U.S. went in and did a military operation, and basically spent the last 50 years mucking around in the Middle East, and creating and setting up, you know, military operations in order to create a monopoly on the buying and selling of petrol in the U.S. dollar denominations. So basically what they did is they created a mechanism to offset their inflationary effects of dollar expansion inside the United States. And they always had a buyer who needed to buy dollars first from their local currencies to be able to buy oil if they wanted to industrialize. Everyone wanted to industrialize and needed to industrialize, so you had guaranteed buyers. So you could print money, and it was no problem. So that's kind of what the petrodollar is. It's the system where, you know, we can blow out the monetary supply and we have guaranteed buyers. And so when you're digitizing and dollar, you know, the dollar, and whether it's, you know, these stable coins or Zelle or Bank of America or whatever, you know, there's digital dollars. It's basically a synthesized, you know, petrodollar derivative, because its value, its monetary value is based on this petrodollar monopoly mechanism. And so I think that's what Joe means when he says that. That's certainly what I mean when I say it. So you're not just like buying a magical stablecoin token. It's like you're buying government debt, and you're participating, or you're paying someone who bought government debt to use their bank account, basically, if you buy like a Tether or something. And so that's sort of what I mean when it's, you know, you're creating rails to sell basically government debt, to people in Indonesia, to unbanked people or to unbanked people in the global South. You're like, hey, buy these. In effect, you're buying petrodollar derivatives because the mechanism that upholds the value of the dollar is the petrodollar. And of course, I think that's changed a lot. I think the last couple years, we've moved away from the petrodollar in a lot of ways. You know, we've seen some really wacky things. We've seen petrol trades between Russia and China settled in euros. I mean, what the hell is that? It doesn't even, like, that's insane. And we're seeing BRICS. We're seeing these, the petro-yuan, yuan. We're seeing these kind of new competitors coming out that are looking at, that's been a kind of topic of the last, few weeks, is this like de-dollarization. It's like a buzzword. And I think in a lot of ways, the dollar system is stronger than ever against the world economy. And we saw that with the appreciation of the Dixie and sort of this relative strength index against other global currencies. We saw the pound go almost below a dollar. We saw the euro go below a dollar. But the U.S. system has this mathematical issue that it needs to deal with, which is this humongous debt. We have like $32 trillion of debt. And we're crushing demand and crushing tax receipts by jacking up interest rates. We need to service our government and we need to service our debt. And there's a limit to how much treasuries we really can sell. And so we're probably mathematically going to have to print to pay for this. And it will probably take longer than everybody thinks. And they'll probably raise rates a lot, higher than everybody thinks. But it's just math. I mean, it really is. It's runaway debt service. And the debt service now is so high, it's beyond the GDP growth of the United States year over year. So we're actually paying more money now to uphold our currency than we are to our military budget or our government spending, like just in debt service, which is kind of one of those fulcrums where, like, once you pass that point, it's like, why are we even doing this? And the only way this Ponzi kind of keeps going, and it is a Ponzi, is if people are buying treasuries and buying government debt. And stable coins are just a really clever way to hide billions and billions of dollars of treasury sales. And they kind of hide behind this like virtue thing and aren't really necessarily always honest about, the real mechanism behind the US dollar system, which is pretty messed up. So I think that's where a lot of the shaking our fists and saying things against the retail CBDCs of stablecoins.
Well, yeah, I mean, we say it all the time on the show. It really is Bitcoin or slavery. And, anyone that's been around the Bitcoin space for a while knows that stablecoins are only stable until they're not. And what's the meme? Sats are my stablecoin. Like, to me, on the Bitcoin standard, I don't think I've ever felt safer. I'm just like, yo, Bitcoin's the stablest monetary network in the world. Like, it's not the Bitcoin price that's unstable. It's the fiat price against Bitcoin that's unstable. And once you unplug from like the fiat mindset, you're just like, oh wait, why was I afraid of all this? And like, you're not the first person. Actually, you and Joe are not the first ones to tell me like stablecoins are the enemy. But you guys are the ones that you go so hard on Twitter that I'm like, okay, like we can have this conversation now. But it really is amazing. And you brought this up, so I'm kind of circling back a little bit. But it really is amazing that in the global South, that they do gravitate towards stable coins first. And it seems of less of a mental leap for most people to jump into a stable coin versus, jump into the quote unquote volatile Bitcoin standard. And it really just doesn't make sense to me. Obviously, I looked at the traditional financial world through the Bitcoin lens. So I want to ask you, how did you learn all this? Did you look at the fiat world through the Bitcoin lens, or did you look at Bitcoin through the fiat lens and then you wrapped your head around what is actually going on?
I mean, great question. So a couple answers. I was lucky enough, I'm adopted, but was raised by two CPAs. My mom and my dad run an accounting firm outside of Boston. I'm very different from them, but they taught me very, very, very well. They had me managing a fake checkbook when I was like 8 years old and learning about compounding interest, and back when compounding interest in a checking account existed. I was really exposed to sort of the value of a dollar really early on. I had, you know, a sort of a leg up on financial literacy. And so, you know, I can't deny that for sure. That was a huge part of it. And then obviously, you know, being able to talk to my parents about some of this stuff. But I would say definitely through the Bitcoin lens. I mean, I was just living in the Bay Area and got exposed to Bitcoin just literally like happenstance. The guy that set up Silk Road 2.0 after Ross was arrested was a regular at my bar. And I didn't know he was doing that shit, but he just explained, you know, Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, right? Which it really was back then, you know, when its monetary policy was highly, you know, inflating. You know, 50% of all Bitcoin ever were issued in the first epoch and then 25% in the next. You know, it makes sense that its main use was sort of this medium of exchange. But anyway, 2017 happened, got sucked into Bitcoin again. I didn't really know that it could go up. I didn't realize that it could appreciate when I first, you know, heard about it. I thought it was just like a way to buy drugs, basically. So, yeah, I got really exposed to Bitcoin. You know, like the sort of cast of characters and the thought leaders, if you will. I would say, honestly, mostly from watching the Kaiser Report. You know, I was a huge Kaiser Report fan. And, you know, during that era, 2017, 18, 19, and they just introduced me basically to like everybody, all the people that, you know, we all know and love, and writers and authors. And they had everybody on the show. And, you know, I just got introduced to a new person every week, basically. Started reading a lot. It's like Bitcoin is so multidimensional that there's so many layers to get lost into it. I love getting into some of the privacy stuff, the game theory, like kind of system stuff. But I've really spent the last like year just really kind of being obsessed with the dollar system. It's purposefully, you know, obfuscated. Like the issues with the dollar system, ironically, like, are that there are private parts of it that people don't understand. It's not it's the lack of transparency of the dollar system and why they make it so difficult to really know what's going on. I mean, it's not a mistake that most people don't understand how the banking plumbing works, because it is ridiculously complicated. And every time something breaks, they put up a new standing operation and there's a new four-letter acronym and a new rate and a new thing. I mean, it's happened. I'm a relatively young guy, and I've seen the new buzzword rate change like three times, and I haven't even been paying attention that long. I would say Bitcoin really was the, like, you know, the mindset switch. But because of that, I had to look at the dollar system, because I was seeing that really, like, you know, I would look at charts and look at all these things. And the thing that I found was the most correlated with the Bitcoin price was the dollar index. And it was the strength of the dollar. And you could see when the dollar was going up, Bitcoin was going down in reverse. And so I wanted to know how that worked. And once you start digging at something like that, you just start picking away at like the scab of the surface of the US dollar system. And next thing you know, you're like, wow, short-term interest rates rule everything. And then you're like, wait, no, it's not really short-term interest rates. It's this overnight yield. And like, you start looking at the politics and the history of the, you know, the Fed chairs and how the Federal Reserve started and why the petrodollar system was set up. And I mean, it's just so deep. There's so much history, so much math. And the beauty of it is that it's, you can articulate a lot of it, empirically, you know, like through data points. So, I did just like a lot of research on, a lot of these, like, you know, pretty big important moments in dollar system history that I had never heard of. And shout out to my boy, Hoddle Magoo. You know, he told me to look into this thing in 85 called the Plaza Accord. And I had literally never even heard of it. And it was kind of the first big, coordinated central banking in like the fiat era, where, you know, the G5 at the time all got together in this little hotel in New York and basically all agreed to, you know, devalue the dollar by 50% in like 6 weeks, to promote growth and do all these other things. Sometimes a strong dollar is not good for the growth of the economy in an ironic way. If everything's priced in dollars, it means everything's more expensive in this strange way, you know, labor inside the country domestically. So they did this big, crazy coordinated thing. And it's like, why would the US dollar system agree to devalue okay, clearly there's something that I don't understand about the dollar, that it would be within the US dollar's interest and the government's interest to devalue the dollar against the yen, the, you know, the yen, against the Deutschmark, against the pound. Like, why would we do this? Dude, it's just endless. Like, the dollar system is so crazy. And I feel like I'm starting to get like a relatively okay kind of understanding on like a 101 level of how it works. But like, I'll end it with this. I bought my dad, you know, I've been orange pilling him for years, and the last few years he's like really got it. And one of the things that really clicked for him was I gave him Nick Bhatia's Layered Money and he read it. And again, my dad, CPA, he was a partner at Arthur Andersen and Ernst & Young. Like, he worked at some of these like heavy accounting firms, and he read Nick Bhatia's book, and he sent me this really funny email, and he was like, man, I had no idea how much trust was in the US dollar system. And it's like, you're an accountant at one of the biggest accounting firms in the US dollar system, and you had no idea about all the trust that's in this thing. And you know, I would talk to some of his, you know, his clients and his friends, you know, especially in 2020 and 2021, when things were popping off, people were really asking a lot of questions. And people would say to me, like, what business school did you go to? I'm like, no, I went to music school and I dropped out and then went back to school for electrical engineering. I've never studied business formally at all. And one of the dudes was like, that's probably why you know so much about the dollar system, you know, because it's like, I didn't learn the propaganda. And I just got to kind of look at it as this like late night kind of, you know, nerd hobbyist dude that just like wanted to learn about, you know, the systems that control me, you know, basically long and short. And so Bitcoin definitely was the reason to look. And then also, you know, it gave me, you know, the time to look. You know, it's become my job now to obsess over a weird thing and write a weird piece about it and talk to people about it. You know, like, this is what I do now. So Bitcoin has like given me not only the interest to do it, but also like the literal time to do it. So yeah, I would say definitely the Bitcoin lens, long-winded answer.
Absolutely love it. Yeah, man, it really is amazing like how the dollar and economics in general are just so complicated on purpose. And
yes,
like I was completely oblivious to all this stuff. And that's why I always fall back to the axiom of like, keep it simple, stupid. And totally. You know, like I learned everything through the Bitcoin lens and it just really simplified and cut through all the noise. And now it's just like, I look at traditional financial world or, you know, traditional economics. I'm like, what the hell are you guys talking about? Like, how are you guys making sense of this? This makes absolutely no sense to me. Like, what are you guys even talking? Does this make sense to you? Like,
I think there's a really important point there, that Bitcoin is a state change from the normal. I mean, it is a way to, you know, basically create uncensored transactions without a trusted third party. Like, that's an insane thing. This like probabilistic solution of the Byzantine generals problem is a state change of money. And so until you really see that there's an alternative, it is kind of hard maybe to just look at fiat and see the issues, because it's like, you know, there isn't an alternative that's easy to understand and grok. Like, Bitcoin is a very weird thing. It's a database, it's a commodity, it's money. It's like, it's kind of none of those things. I guess it's definitely a database. And it's its own thing. It's a totally new, you know, form of trustless communication that's never really been possible before at all. And then you get into the monetary policy stuff and you look at, you know, absolute scarcity in a universe that's like almost literally infinite. I mean, just barely under infinite, you know, just humongous, you know, to create a system that, you know, again, through probabilistic, you know, game theory, basically, but it's a scarce capped, economic unit of account. Like, what the hell is that? That could never possibly exist in any other form. There's no way to create, you know, the synthetic commodity, I guess, without the absolute advances, technologically that Bitcoin brings. And it's downstream from the internet. You know, it's like, if we didn't have this connectivity, between all of us, we wouldn't have an ability to operate Bitcoin. And we're just like now at a different place where, yeah, we're kind of a different species with the internet and the way that we connect with each other and the way that we have access and can go and pull up instantly, you know, the vast knowledge of recorded history. And Bitcoin is like, you know, the money protocol of that, of this internet revolution and this interconnectivity revolution. And it's a huge state change. So it's like, I don't ever get upset at anybody that is having a hard time breaking off the fiat world, because, you know, it is such a big state change, and you have to really understand a lot about Bitcoin to understand why, you know, it's so important. So I have a lot of patience for folks that, you know, are, you know, still kind of bought in or one foot in to this other world. I will say, I'll end with this, because I know I've been ranting, but, you know, it's the easiest time ever to orange pill anyone.
Go rant.
It's just, all right, thanks. So anyway, no, it's the easiest time ever to orange pill people. It's like, just point out the window. I mean, like, inflation is hot. Everybody saw them gaslight us and say that, you know, inflation is transitory. I'm not worried about it. It's not that bad. You know, and then all, you know, now here we are. It's like, you can't really ignore that stuff when the cycles get compressed and they happen so fast. It's like, we forgot what happened in 2008 a little bit, you know, like a lot of people forgot about it. Cause it had been so long since the last time we basically had a default, you know, 20 years or whatever. And now those cycles are compressing and it's like, okay, we remember 2008. Now we've watched The Big Short 50 times. You know, we live through it and there's really good content about it. And now we have, you know, the post COVID bullshit and all this. So like, as the cycles compress, it gets easier and easier to see why an alternative is necessary. And then now we got banking things failing. We got FedNow coming out. We got, you know, this new BTFD or whatever, this new, Fed operation. You know, it's like, it's sort of tangible. You can see, you know, there's something brewing, and I think it's obvious. I think a lot of people are getting the Bitcoin thing, and I it's cool to see. You know, I would hate to see Bitcoinization being led by a lot of pain and a lot of destruction and hurt people. I don't want to see that. But at least we have an alternative. You know, at least we have a way to opt out. And so yeah, I mean. Yeah, Bitcoin. Wild
well,
shit.
Well, human psychology is weird, man. Like, you can, what's the saying? Lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink it.
Yep.
But if it's thirsty as hell, it's obviously going to be like, give me the solution.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
I agree. Like, it's almost like Bitcoin was made for this exact moment, guys. Like, it's almost like it was designed for this.
It might be causing the moment. You know?
Ooh.
Who the hell knows? I mean, wow. I don't know. I mean, that's something I look at in this March 2020 bullshit where I say, the petrodollar died and the Bitcoin dollar was born.
Yeah,
you know,
I saw that.
We saw some mathematical crazy shit happen. We saw oil futures go negative overnight. That's a crazy trading anomaly. That makes no sense. I mean, like, we grew up our entire lives, like the US government, like, invading countries to get oil. Like, that's just like a Tuesday for Americans. And all of a sudden we're like pulling out of Afghanistan suddenly and oil's fucking trading negative. And all of this is happening right before a mathematical moment in the Bitcoin protocol, which was, you know, the fourth halving, third halving. And it's when we went from, you know, relative issuance to below 2%, which is, you know, below the rate of the US dollar target inflation, and certainly below the rate or exactly at the rate, depending on what part of the epoch, of gold coming out of the ground. So we saw kind of a mathematical moment. We saw a political moment, a military moment, and then this crazy futures anomaly in oil. And then what did we see? Obviously, you know, Bitcoin imploded that day as well to $3,500, but it 20x'd in a year. And when you see something like that happening, it's like, clearly something bigger is going on here. There's some, you know, that's a pretty big market anomaly, and goes against everything I've ever known about the US government, which is, you know, basically oil-based resource colonialism and imperialism, and making, you know, manipulating oil markets with dollars. And all of a sudden it's like, hey, we'll pay you a negative, you know, we'll pay you $50 to take a barrel of oil away from us. And obviously it's not that literal, but that's a wild thing. I'm a big Luke Gromen guy. And he always talks about, you know, he's like, he starts off all his things. And I say this a lot, but he's just like, no one has any idea what's going on. This is uncharted territory for traders. And if anyone tells you they know what's going on, no one's lived through this. We've never been at this point where the US dollar system or the reserve world currency rather has basically run off the cliff and it just hasn't fallen yet. You know, it's like we can all see the math. So we're in this uncharted kind of place. And it's like, I love to FUD Bitcoin and FUD my own bags and try to find things. And it's like, I wouldn't want to be in anything else right now, personally.
Yeah, man. I'm glad that Luke says the same, you know, metaphor, because I've been saying it. Of course, I like to break things down to the average person. I'm like, all right, guys, you guys remember when Coyote and Roadrunner would chase each other?
Yes.
And the Coyote would run off the cliff.
Exactly.
And then he'd look down, and only when he looked down would he actually fall off the cliff. I'm like,
yes,
that's where we are right now, people. Like, dude, this is where we are.
1,000%.
Anyways, I'm sure we could do this forever, but I know it wouldn't be the right pod for an hour, the last 10, 15, maybe 20 minutes, whatever we have to do, if we didn't get into all the heat you've been a part of the last couple weeks or so. So we have a comment here by Jaime. I saw you guys are going back and forth in space. He says, JPEGs are cool, bro. Let's put them on the blockchain and sell them for a bunch, bro. And I saw your article. I did do some research over the weekend, so I can kind of, you know, wrap my head around the opposing view on it, because personally, and we kind of touched on this in before we started going live, I'm kind of just the, you know, Bitcoin sound money maxi. I look totally at Bitcoin as I would love, and again, I'm just one person, but Bitcoin as a purely monetary, you know, database. Like, that's kind of how I look at it. And so seeing what's happening with ordinals and inscriptions the last couple, I think it's what, like 2 months or something, it does seem like they have been adding bloat to the blockchain. And you keep mentioning Magoo, and I did see this tweet. Let me see if I have it. Actually, this one's pretty good. I really like this one. This is you memeing. You go, Magoo goes, I don't know who is the arbiter of morality, but I do know it's not me or Bitcoin consensus. And you go, my man spitting. Is this the free market? Is this the free market? And then Magoo, again, just because you can do something with Bitcoin doesn't mean you should do it.
100%. And
I think this is where I'll let you come in. What's your thoughts? I think I also have some more tweets here, but
at the
interest of time, maybe you could do like a steel man for and the opposition, and then we'll have a little convo and roll this one out.
Yeah, 1,000%. And first off, like, I just want to say, like, I think the criticism in a lot of ways is valid. You know, this is a new thing, and you know, people have used the free market and public goods and commodities to scam people all over the place. That's not a new thing. Like, so I think people are really wary of this stuff, because, you know, they've just seen historically this type of technology has been used to just screw people over, do pump and dumps and all that stuff. So, like, I understand the pushback on that. Personally, I have no interest in buying or selling ordinals. I don't own any. I have no interest in buying them. I don't endorse any collections or anything like that on a personal level. I think you should save your Satoshis. But I think it's really important to talk about, like, you know, this is a thing that people care about. And we've seen a million of them come on in the last couple months. And there's a lot of really interesting use cases for this technology that no one really wants to talk about or consider. Because, you know, the first use case is put monkey JPEGs on the blockchain. And firstly, I think Bitcoin is a public good. And so people should be able to do what they want on it. And I will fight to the death for the right for someone that, even if they're my enemy and I hate them, to be able to make a valid Bitcoin transaction without my ethics or my bias preventing that. I mean, that's why Bitcoin's use case exists, right? It's that no trusted third parties and uncensored transactions. So the thing that Magoo was saying that I completely agree with is, just because something is within Bitcoin consensus doesn't not mean it's fucking shitty or unethical or a scam. You know, like, it's a completely valid Bitcoin transaction. If I say, yo, Opti, send me one Bitcoin and I'll send you two, and then I just keep your Bitcoin, and that's shitty. Like, that's a bad thing to do. That's this grifty, scammy thing. So there was a lot of people, and I say this on both sides, like, I think both sides kind of the debate have been kind of lazy, in the sense that, just because you, as Magoo said, just because something's within consensus doesn't make it good. There's pinning attacks, there's lightning probes, there's donation scams. You know, there's plenty of things within consensus that are bad. So this idea that, like, well, it's within consensus, so screw it, like, screw you. It's like, well, that doesn't necessarily mean it's the right thing to do. And that was Magoo's point, and I totally agree. I also think that, you know, this idea a lot of people talk about, you know, oh, it's just this arbitrary code, and or it is just this social lens to look at Bitcoin, and it's arbitrary and who cares. And there's a part of that that's true in the sense of Satoshi distribution within transactions. You know, Satoshis don't exist. They're this, you know, there's this unit that exists on UTXOs, but like when a UTXO is destroyed and new ones are made, like those aren't the same Satoshis that transfer. So the ORT index creates this kind of like, you know, logical assumption of first in and first out, but like that's not true. You know, there's no tracer, there's nothing that connects the SAT from one UTXO to the other at all, unless you make this sort of social lens to create a sentimental value to this Satoshi. But the code itself isn't like arbitrary. Like there's a code to the way ORT index works, and there's like thousands and thousands and thousands of people that use it. And so I think that argument is also weak, that it's this arbitrary thing. It's like, no, it's a social consensus with literal code that's built on top of Bitcoin, just like a lot of other stuff. It's not completely arbitrary. So I think the tooling as a whistleblowing, time stamping, data durability and immutability, as tooling, I think is incredibly powerful. And like me as a journalist and as someone who really cares about whistleblowers and the ability for people to do that, I think Bitcoin is like this unbelievable, you know, truth database, this commodity that is accessible unfettered to anyone on the planet that can, you know, pay the fee to get into the block. And I think that's like way more powerful than BitTorrent in a lot of ways, and way more powerful than, you know, a 4chan message board or, you know, some of these other services that people have suggested kind of just using in lieu of, you know, inscribing something. So I think that there's so many use cases that are incredibly like, I mean, we're seeing, you know, basically people editing, you know, the public record in so many ways. There's so much corruption. There's so much like censoring. There's so much deplatforming. And like, we really just need to look at like kind of the last couple years of like misinformation from everybody to kind of see that it's like, you know, there's an absolute need in this world for truth. And Bitcoin can now kind of serve as with this tooling, as a database that is immutable and durable and timely. And that's incredibly powerful that it's never existed before. And I think it's very naive for people to reject that, tooling. And I think also it's kind of dumb maybe for the first use cases to be selling JPEGs. Like I don't think that's the best use case for this tooling. But I will defend the right for anyone to use it forever. I don't even think that should be controversial. Bitcoin is a database, and Bitcoin has its own motives beyond our human desires for what Bitcoin is. And Bitcoin itself as a protocol wants to create as many reachable nodes as possible, and it wants to increase demand for its block space. You know, at the end of the day, we say, you know, kilowatt per hour or Satoshi or whatever, but like the unit of account of Bitcoin is sat per V byte. You know, if there's no block space demand, it doesn't matter how much the US dollar value of it is worth. What is going to sustain Bitcoin post issuance, and probably well before post issuance, is transaction fees. And that comes downstream of there being interest and demand for the block space asset itself. So what has Ordinals done? It's created thousands of more reachable nodes with a quasi financial incentive to remain archival nodes, depending if they want, you know, to be able to ensure that their witness data, of this thing that they've created, you know, exists forever. They're going to want to run this. So we've created more reachable nodes, more economic nodes, and we've increased, the demand for block space, with this entire new use case for Bitcoin, the database. And that's what Bitcoin wants. And it may not be what we want. And we may want to, you know, pull a Roger Ver and pull up the first line of the Bitcoin white paper and say, it says peer-to-peer cash, guys. And it's like, well, there's a lot of things people use Bitcoin for that have nothing to do with peer-to-peer cash. They have their decentralized IDs, their, you know, stablecoin providers, there's payment rails. there's time stamping itself already in it. Operturn. There's other use cases for Bitcoin. Email addresses. Sailor just announced email addresses for Lightning or whatever. And so this idea that like this use case is okay and this one's not, I think it would be exhausting to try to decide that with this public good. It seems like there's a little bit of selected outrage in that sense. So we look at the metrics of what Ordinals has done in terms of like, you know, increasing demand for block space and making more nodes and getting more people interested into Bitcoin. I just don't know how you can really deny that truth. I think that there's absolutely some very valid criticism about creating a token that, you know, a token, again, it's all Bitcoin, entirely Bitcoin. This is Bitcoin space. But I think, you know, there's some valid criticism about people, you know, thinking that it's unethical to, you know, claim that there's an associated SAT with this arbitrary witness data, because based off this like arbitrary ORD index thing, and you're trying to sell it for more money than its Satoshi value. Like, I think there are some valid criticisms there, depending on how it's done. I think it's very clear what we did on Saturday was absolutely not a pump and dump and absolutely not money laundering or any of this bullshit that people were saying that we were doing. It's like we had very low volume and we had some really happy buyers that were interested in buying a physical mag and an ordinal associated with it. And they seemed pretty stoked. And, you know, I think that that's okay. I don't think that there's, you know, you're not touching Ponzi rails. You're not feeding Vitalik's bags. You're not selling someone, you know, this sort of off-chain, you know, non-native, like, you know, fetch of a JPEG somewhere. It's like it's all on the chain, and it helps Bitcoin in so many ways. And this isn't a block size increase. This isn't a protocol consensus change. It's tooling, and I think that this stuff is going to get priced out. Like, I don't think we're going to see huge amounts of inscriptions at the rate that we've seen when financial traction, you know, transactions, you know, are ready and we're ready to have full blocks of complete financial transactions. When we're ready for that, I mean, ordinals just don't scale like that. And that will make the old ones a lot rarer, I suppose, depending on how you want to look at it. But it's going to be really, really, really hard, you know, when it's a variable fee market. And if it 10Xs and you're paying $1,000 for an inscription, that's $10,000. If you're paying 5 cents, it's 50 cents. It's a much smaller, you know, rate change when you're paying a much smaller fee. So these things just don't really scale that well. And, you know, one of the things that we were excited about Taproot for was privacy. That was one of the main things, and, you know, and some scaling stuff. But one of the main ways that privacy works in a UTX model system, and really in general, is by having an increased anonymity set. And right now we have basically a floating raft of transactions that are pay to Taproot scripts that are waiting to get included into blocks, you know, on a low SAT per V byte rate. That's really good for building out privacy on the base layer. You want to see coin swaps, you know, you want to exchange, you know, come out of an exchange and do a coin swap and do a pay to Taproot. You know, it doesn't matter if you're the only one using Taproot, you're the only one, you know, there's a much easier ways to trace that if there's not a lot of activity in pay to Taproot scripts. Well, now we have a shit ton of activity in that. So it's like, I'm just looking at every metric and it's just like, it's kind of hard to, you know, really see where this is actually really bad for Bitcoin, outside of the fact that it absolutely, of course, enables people to be able to be unethical and sell shitty tokens under the, you know, not tokens, but, you know, Bitcoin data under the claims that it's going to appreciate. And that's shitty. I think that's stupid. I don't care about that stuff at all. But all the other stuff seemingly is like pretty objectively good for Bitcoin. And I guess I shouldn't say that, but it's subjectively good for Bitcoin by these empirical metrics. I mean, I guess I just sort of, I knew people would freak out about it. And I think people will continue to freak out about it. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. But, you know, Casey, who created Ordinals, is a really good friend of mine. And I've been talking to him about this for a long time, a lot longer than most people have realized ordinals existed. The first writing that I know of was in Q2 of 2022 in the print magazine talking about ordinals. I don't know anyone else that was really talking about it before. And he's a savage Bitcoin maxi. And he built something that he thought was objectively good for Bitcoin and was going to help Bitcoin adoption, help node counts, help with, you know, upping transaction fees for miners revenue, which is really what propels the system. If you're a monetary policy maximalist, that comes downstream from protocol policy and protocol health. And I'm a monetary maximalist too. That's why I'm in this shit. That's why I fucking stay up all night reading about Paul Volcker. It's because I want to know about this shit. I'm not really, you know, an NFT guy in any way at all. But this is good for the protocol of Bitcoin. And I think Casey designed it in a very specific way to be very good for Bitcoin. It's packaged in this op fail, you know, envelope of code that doesn't cause your node to need to validate it. It takes less computation to validate an inscription than it does like a lightning channel open. You know, these are very, very prunable if you don't want to, you know, pass a certain point. You know, you don't need to hold on to this data if you don't want to. It's not bloating the UTXO set. It was created very specifically to be as healthy for Bitcoin as possible and minimize the pain points, the granular points, and maximize the utility and increase nodes and increase demand. And I don't think, you know, again, it's always impossible to exactly see when you make tooling and create new incentives, like how it will all play out, of course. But like, you know, it was done very deliberately in a very specific way as sort of a love letter sort of thing to Bitcoin. And he's convinced me. And I think that the technology and the adoption proves that. And there's a powerful thing going on. And I think that there's a lot of blame that needs to be put on maxis for not understanding. And I'm a maxi, that not understanding that this is maxi technology built for maxis to completely defang these leeches of alternative currencies that are claiming to have a use case when they don't. And this very clearly takes away, you know, this one of the main use cases of Ethereum with this NFT shit. It just completely destroys it. It takes away this fucking bullshit of BSV, of, you know, storage on, you know, it takes away the two use cases from these like two shitty, annoying, you know, hemorrhoids on Bitcoin. And it brings everybody back home to Bitcoin. It's like I see it very much so as a wonderful thing for Bitcoin. You know, as long as, of course, you know, we understand as a community kind of like what our moral floor is. And I think that was sort of why we did this kind of Dutch auction in the way that we did it. We were like, listen, these are partially signed Bitcoin transactions. Absolutely no one on staff is buying these. Absolutely no one is pumping and dumping. We're not doing money laundering. If we don't sell a bunch of them, like, good, then people will know that we're fucking being like, you know, sincere, and we're not trying to do shady bullshit. Don't sign the pre-signed Bitcoin transaction if you don't believe that the collectible and the content that's related to this purchase is worth it for you. And we knew we'd get a lot of flack for it. But I think we stand by, you know, we all have very, very different opinions on this all across the company. And I think it's very nuanced within even the individuals. Like the way I feel, you know, free market capitalism, it's not hurting Bitcoin. It's objectively good for Bitcoin. And the tooling is fucking badass. And we can do so much cool shit with it. We can put STL files on there. We can put banned books on there. We can create bounty systems, you know, where investigative journalists can look up and be like, hey, I'm looking for this piece, this data cable, this classified leak. And people can inscribe it and you know, it's durable and it's immutable and it's timely. And that's a state change for information as well. So like, yeah, let's let the market cook. Let's let Bitcoin cook. It's not about us. It's not about me. We'll let the market decide. And let's see where this thing goes. We're going to price out JPEGs real quick. And when we do, I think people will see that there's a real use case for inscriptions far beyond sentimental speculation. in a way that I think is really good for Bitcoin and Bitcoiners in the long term.
Yeah, I'm sure this could be a whole another podcast on its own. So at the risk of cutting this a little short for you guys, and I'll bring Mark back on another time. You know, like personally, I don't care about JPEGs, and I don't see JPEGs having a significant market share in the future. Like you said, I think it will get priced out. But smarter people than me have mentioned that there may be some interesting development in regards to the size of Taproot input and what may be possible in the future. Mm. And again, like that's above my pay grade. But like, again, before I get flack for this, like, I think JPEGs are stupid, but instilling CAD files on the blockchain for 3D prints, like, I don't know, that's kind of cool. And my sound money maximalist in me like cringes when I say that. Like, I do feel like a shitcoiner saying this, guys, so don't throw me through the mud yet. But like, you know, the sound money maximalist in me, it does feel like it's an artificially inflated fee price, and maybe it's a bit premature. I know we're always worried about like when the block subsidy runs out, will there be a significant price floor in fees to ensure that the Bitcoin network continues to, you know, go on into the future. So like, again, like I think kind of, and this isn't like the standard cop out of like, let the free market do what it does and you can scam on the free market and you know,
right,
there's no social layer to that aspect.
Totally. Like,
We're very the C word. We're very aware of this
conscious
kind of mantra. Yeah.
Conscientious.
There's a G in there. So anyways, it doesn't really matter. Okay. But I think this will play out in time, and we will see if there is any actual developments out of this, or whether this is kind of like a shitcoin money grab, and
totally,
people are feeling like, oh, this is a quick way to make a buck, and you know, a ploy to get more shitcoiners back on Bitcoin, when it's like, a lot of times most of the shitcoiners just don't understand Bitcoin. They don't understand Bitcoin from like a sound money principles like foundation. But you did say something, and again, we're at an hour and 11, so I'm sure we could go on for a lot longer. But you did say something that kind of interested me, and you said something on the ideas of the public good, that Bitcoin network is a public good. And you know, you said it on the flip side about like, who am I to control what the public does on the free market? But it does feel like, back to that Magoo tweet, you know, just because we can doesn't mean we should. And
I agree.
Bitcoin is a public good, I feel like we do need some healthy respect to the common good that is Bitcoin. And maybe, you know, looking at our own behavior and realizing, okay, is this high time preference behavior? Am I getting a quick dopamine rush when it really felt like the last couple of months there was a lot of fees that were being outpriced because of this artificial, again, I'm using the term artificial, price raise of the fees. And like, I was overpaying fees and I'm like, God damn, like, you ordinal motherfuckers, like, why am I overpaying my fees right now? I just need to make a transaction so I can survive. But I understand that, you know, I am just one person. And yes, there is a social layer in Bitcoin. And yes, there is people that want to, you know, tinker and develop. And I think we are seeing in real time, like a healthy balance of the free market trying to figure this out. Like, is there something here worthwhile? Or is this just kind of, you know, playing stupid games and winning stupid prizes? But on another note, and you can have the last word on this, not only on this question, but in general, I saw on Twitter, it might've been last week, but was there like a huge bug recently with ordinals or something in one of the latest developments? I saw that they lost a lot of inscriptions and they're thinking about rolling it back, or I don't know.
I don't know exactly
what it was.
Yeah. So basically,
Hold on. Jamie gets it. Cognizant. Thank you.
There it is. Thank you, brother. And don't hate me too much. I'm sorry. Okay. So there was a thing. It's funny that it's really come up recently because I think it was in like February. There was a bug in the Ord software that didn't recognize inscriptions that were made only in the sense of the serial number, you know, like first inscription is 0, inscription 1, inscription 2, you know, up to 2.1 quadrillion or whatever. There was a bug in the serialization ordering of if the associated sat that was, you know, connected to the witness data, to the inscription, if it wasn't the first input in the actual inscription funding transaction. So there was about like 1,200 inscriptions that were made before they noticed that that was happening. So they fixed it where now moving forwards, you know, you can inscribe on multiple inscriptions on a sat, you know, you can be the second input. So, you know, sort of moving forward, everything is totally fine. But there was a sort of a decision to be made of like, okay, well, we actually have these 1,200 inscriptions that they're on the blockchain. They're totally there. Witness data, they will never not be there. And obviously the sats are there. There is just a numbering miss in that, you know, so basically there's 1,200 inscriptions that weren't numbered, I think starting somewhere in the 300,000, somewhere like that. I'm not exactly sure. So they had a community decision, I guess, to decide what they wanted to do, if they wanted to push all of the inscriptions that had made past that 1,200 up, or if they wanted to, you know, what would be better for the holders of those inscriptions to make it their its own set and like a different number as sort of these like rare, you know, miscounted inscriptions. So that was the bug. It had nothing to do with the, I mean, everything's in the blocks, you know, they're in the witness data. All of the inscriptions are safe or fine, exist, whatever that means to you. There was just, 1,200 that weren't listed. It was a community decision, I guess, to decide what they were going to do with it. I don't actually know what they did with it. I mean, anytime, you know, there's a mistake made by someone or something, you know, people really want to come after Ordinals and hate on it, which I totally get. There was a bug in the code, in this like alpha, you know, beta code, that they had to account for, I guess. So I'm not exactly sure what they decided on, but I know that they decided on something.
Awesome. Well, Mark, we did go over about 15 minutes. You want to give some last words, tie a bow tie to this?
Yeah, for sure. I just wanted to say, I guess, just in general, like, not as a cop out, but, you know, Bitcoin Magazine is a free speech, you know, Bitcoin only Bitcoiners platform. And we love to platform and do things that doesn't always go well with the people that are our base. I mean, I remember when we did the censorship resistance cover, you know, people were DMing me and being like, QAnon's a bad look for Bitcoin Magazine. And it's like, okay, this, what the hell are you talking about? And then we did the Bukele cover and the Buck, and people were like, statism is a terrible look for... It's like, okay, I get that. You know, we get that. People got upset about the SBF cover a little bit, you know, and also within the magazines itself, we have, you know, some really good pieces from people that, you know, believe things that maybe a lot of other people don't, you know, depending what side of the climate, you know, debate you stand on. You know, we've had people writing about how this is bullshit and we should just totally ignore it. And people writing like, hey, if this is a reality, how can Bitcoin help? And I think it would be a loss to not consider and not, you know, platform Bitcoiners, because as Bitcoin gets more and more adopted, what it means to be a Bitcoiner changes. And again, it's really not about us and it's about Bitcoiners. And that does not mean that we should start fucking scamming people because there are scammers in Bitcoin. I don't mean that. But, you know, we're going to continue to do weird shit in Bitcoin and represent Bitcoiners, and like, you just really can't deny Ordinals are a thing to some degree. And I don't know what we'll do in the future with them. But I do know that Bitcoin is for everyone. And, you know, it's not my place to be the arbiter of, you know, what people can or shouldn't use Bitcoin for. And I want to hear their voice. So, like, you got a fucking anti-Ordinal itch and you want to, you know, get that out there, like, talk to me, reach out to me. Like, I'm a good faith engager. I have a lot of friends in the company and outside that think this stuff is total fucking horseshit, and they have a lot of valid points. And then I have other people that are total degens and love this shit, and it's like the most fun they've ever had in Bitcoin, and they're so excited, and I think that they're right too. So, you know, come find us at Bitcoin Magazine. We may have already launched the new magazine in this call, I'm not sure, but we got a new one just about to come out. I'm very excited about it. Please support Bitcoin Magazine. I'll see you in Miami. Please reach out and come join us, be on our platform and know that this isn't this homogenic thing. Bitcoiners are continuing to get weirder and stranger and be a different thing every day. So, come hop along. You can follow me at Mark Goodwin with an underscore between the W and the IN, obviously at bitcoinmagazine.com, and buy the print mag, and always listen to Simply Bitcoin.
Yeah. I was going to tell them, what are you working on? But obviously everyone knows what you're working on. So
yeah. And I finished a book called The Bitcoin Dollar, that hopefully will be out before the end of the year, that talks about a lot of the stuff we talked about today. Opti's fucking, thanks so much for having me on, brother. It's so much fun. And, give some love to Nico, and, do it again anytime, man.
Will do, brother. Yeah. We'll bring you on in a little bit. Maybe after the next controversy, we'll have to bring you back on.
It may have already happened. I don't know.
It may have just happened. Who knows? But yeah, man, really appreciate this. The beginning of this was pure fire. I know the end got a little contentious, but really appreciate it, Mark. I can't wait to hang out with you in Miami, and we'll grab a beer or whatever the extracurriculars are at that party.
Yes, a little Topo Chico for me, and then we'll have fun later.
Exactly. All right, Mark. Well, let me roll this out. Hang out for a moment, and I'll talk to you behind the scenes.
Sounds great.
All right, guys. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this. I know this one's a little different than all the other TTOs I've done, but I've been seeing Mark and Joe go hard on the, Bitcoin rails, stablecoin, CBDCs, and I wanted to get that information out. Of course, I probably could have gone 2 hours with him. Maybe the next time I can get Joe and Mark to come in together. That might be a lit podcast. Anyways, I know the end got a little contentious. I saw you guys in the chat getting a little spicy. I appreciate all of you guys. Again, I think this is kind of part of the process of everyone not only learning the full potential of Bitcoin, but also standing the ground and doing what they think is right. But I do definitely believe in the idea of, if we can't have these discussions, what are we doing? We're just in an echo chamber. And hey, I love my echo chamber, boys and girls. But I think this is all good for Bitcoin. So here we are. Really hope you guys enjoyed this pod. Go check out the physical prints. I absolutely love them. I'm glad that Joe is my neighbor right now, and I can read the magazines and stuff. So I'll see you guys tomorrow. Of course, this is just TTL. We will be live tomorrow, 12:15 p.m. Eastern time on Simply Bitcoin. So really appreciate all you guys. I will see you tomorrow. Have a good rest of your day. Let's keep spreading that Bitcoin signal. All right. Peace out, guys.